ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
प्रायेष्वभद्रेषु
नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 17। Maharaj Prithu becomes angry at the earth. Text 15. Tam
Tam
Anvadavat
Anvadavat
Tat
Vainyaha
Vainyaha Upitaha
Upitaha
Ati
Ati
Aruna
Aruna
Ikshnaha
Ikshnaha
ईक्षणः
शरं
धनुषि
धनुषि
संधाय
संधाय
यत्र
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 पलायते
पलायते
तामन्वधावत् तद्वैन्यः शरं धनुषि संधाय यत्र यत्र पलायते ताम अन्वधावत् तद्वैन्यः कुपितोऽत्यरुणे क्षणः शरं धनुषि संधाय यत्र यत्र पलायते ताम अन्वधावत् तद्वैन्यः कुपितोऽत्यरुणे क्षणः शरं धनुषि संधाय यत्र यत्र पलायते
the cow-shaped earth,
Anvadhavat,
he chased,
Tat, then,
Vainyaha,
the son of King Vena,
Kupitaha,
being very much angry,
Ati Aruna,
very red,
Ikshanaha,
his eyes,
Sharam,
an arrow,
Dhanushi,
on the bow,
Sandhaya,
placing,
Yatra Yatra,
wherever,
Palayate,
she flees.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada.
Seeing this, Maharaj Prithu became very angry, and his eyes became as red as the early morning sun. Placing an arrow on his bow, he chased the cow-shaped earth wherever she would run. There is no purport to this verse, so we will recite the translations of text 16, 17 and 18, and there is a purport in text 18. 16. The cow-shaped earth ran here and there in outer space between the heavenly planets and the earth, And wherever she ran, the king chased her with his bow and arrow. Just as a man cannot escape the cruel hands of death, the cow-shaped earth could not escape the hands of the son of Vena. At length the earth, fearful, her heart aggrieved, turned back in helplessness. Text 18, I'll recite the verse myself.
Uvachacha mahabhagam dharma jnapanna vatsala trahimam api bhutanam palane vasthito bhavan.
Addressing the great opulent king Prithu as a knower of religious principles and shelter of the surrendered, she said, "Please save me. You are the protector of all living entities. Now you are situated as a king of this planet." Purport. The cow-shaped earth addressed King Prithu as Dharmajna, which refers to one who knows the principles of religion. The principles of religion dictate that a woman, a cow, a child, a brahmana, and an old man must be given all protection by the king or anyone else. Consequently, Mother Earth took the shape of a cow. She was also a woman. Thus, she appealed to the king as one who knows the principles of religion. Religious principles also dictate that one is not to be killed if he surrenders. She reminded King Prithu that not only was he an incarnation of God, but he was situated as a king of the earth as well. Therefore, his duty was to excuse her.
Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudhapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshadarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna.
The citizens of the earth planet had approached King Prithu, who was the emperor of the whole world, for protection and for relief from hunger. King Prithu considered the situation for a considerable length of time and then concluded that it was Mother Earth who was at fault. And thus he approached her with a mood to chastise her. Having understood who King Prithu was and what his mood was in approaching her, she fled. And Maharaj Prithu chased her. In this series of verses, we see that she flees everywhere, all through the universe. Not only on the earth, but also in the heavenly planets and the space in between. But everywhere, wherever she goes, King Prithu is there behind her. Finally, she realized that there was no escape. So she turned around, fearful, her heart aggrieved, helpless, and surrendered to King Prithu. Surrender is possible only when one considers oneself helpless. When one considers that one is actually in a dangerous position. So long as one is under the illusion in this world that everything is fine and that we are fully capable of taking care of our own problems and that we can find a solution to the miseries of our existence merely by our own intellect, our abilities, and so on, then we will never be able to surrender. Any form of pride goes against the principle of surrender because it is not possible. And therefore, Krishna puts the living entities in a situation of fear and misery. That is why this material world is a place of suffering. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, where it is an abode of misery and a place where everything is temporary. Temporary means that everything is going to end. So our plans, our happiness, our arrangements, wherein we derive some kind of pleasure, wherein we place our hopes, they are all dashed to the ground because everything is temporary. We may work hard for a lifetime to build up an empire, but then death will come. Eventually we will die, and eventually the kingdom will also perish. Somebody else will become the king. Someone else may come and conquer that land. This has been human history from time immemorial. If there were no suffering, if everything were not temporary in this material world, why would anyone have the inclination to surrender to the Supreme Lord? As it is, even when there is so much suffering, even when everything is so temporary, still people don't surrender. Imagine what would happen if everything was eternal in the material world and there was no suffering. But that cannot be, because that is against the constitutional identity or position of the soul. We are meant to be eternally servants of Krishna. Jivera Swarupa Hoya Krishna Nityadas. So that is our constitutional position, and we cannot be happy in any position other than that. So this material world has been created as a fantasy place where rebellious living entities who have somehow or the other come under the clutches of an independent mentality, who have developed some pride, they have a chance to vainly enjoy separate from the Lord. But of course that is not possible. But those who are sensible, who have reached the perfection of their intelligence, analyze their own suffering situation, analyze the position of the world, and realize that there is no other goal but to surrender to the Lord. Bhavya dekhiya jagata sansari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that I have analyzed this whole world, and there is no other shelter in this world apart from you. So the conclusion of knowledge, of perfect analysis, is to surrender to the Supreme Lord. One who understands that the Supreme Lord is Krishna, He is the source of everything, He is our only shelter, surrenders to Him. And that is actually this, the perfection of life. But so long as we feel that actually things are okay, I am able to manage my affairs,
and it's in our hands, there is no question of surrender. So Kunti Maharani prays that unless one is devoid of the opulences of material existence, it is not possible to be helpless. Janmashvari Shruti Shribhir Edhamana Madhakumam Naivadhatya Vidhatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gochara. She says that, my dear Krishna, in this world, people who have high birth, Janma, who have a lot of wealth, Aishwarya, who are very learned, educated, intelligent, Shruti, or who are very beautiful, Shribhi, they cannot surrender to you. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribhi Edhamana Madhapuma. Why can't they surrender to you? Because of Madha. Madha means kind of madness. Madness is synonymous with pride. Interesting that the word in Sanskrit for pride means madness also. So madness is a state of disconnection from reality, isn't it? When a person starts imagining himself to be something other than what he is, he imagines that he is the king of the world or something like that, then we say he's mad. It's a state of madness. Because there is no touch with reality there. So similarly, when one imagines oneself to be anything other than the eternal servant of the Lord, anything other than an eternal particle, 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair, one is mad. So this is madness. So this pride is a form of madness. So edhamana madhapuman naivadhatya vidhatum vai tvam akinchana gochara. Such a person cannot approach you with a helpless heart. So when we are put into helpless positions, that is actually Krishna's favor or Krishna's mercy upon us. So at least then we can realize that we must surrender to Krishna. Even then, people who are in a suffering state can surrender to Krishna only if they have that devotional piety. There are others who may simply commit suicide or take refuge in, say, some intoxicants or something to get rid of their fear or to create some false courage. When a person takes intoxicants, let's say, for example, then he becomes very courageous. He is able to take on anyone and anything. But a true analysis of the world indicates that we are actually in a helpless position. We shouldn't think that Mother Earth is the only one because she's been chased by King Prithu, who's got his bow and arrow ready to kill her. But that is exactly our position. We also have something that is chasing us to kill us. What is that? Time. The time factor. It's only a matter of time before our bodies are going to be destroyed. So time is chasing us. So we should also be like Mother Earth, thinking, yes, I must surrender to Krishna. Because time is also the energy of Krishna. So now Mother Earth has surrendered to King Prithu. And King Prithu doesn't seem inclined to show mercy at this time. And therefore, she appeals to him. Because she knows that King Prithu is Dharmagya, as this 18th verse says. Dharmagya means a person who knows the principles of religion. And as Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport here, the principles of religion dictate that there are five categories of people, of entities, who need to be protected. Not that others don't, but specifically these five categories do. These five categories are: number one, a woman; number two, a cow; number three, an elderly person; number four, a child; and number 5, a Brahmana. So these 5 are especially worthy of protection, and any offense, any mistreatment against these 5 categories will have very severe reactions to whoever is a perpetrator of that violence or cruelty. Of course, a spiritually evolved or cultured person will never commit violence against any living entity. But especially these 5 have been mentioned in the scripture. So Mother Earth, knowing King Prithu to be Dharmakya, the knower of religious principles, took the form of a cow. So now she had double protection. She was a woman plus she was a cow. So a cow is also one of the 5 protected entities. So then she came and she also said to Krishna, she also addressed him as Apanna Vatsala. Vatsala indicates Krishna's quality of being very affectionate to those who are devoted to him or those who are surrendered to him. Apanna indicates a person who has come to him to surrender. And Vatsala means one who is very affectionate, like a cow is affectionate to a calf. Vats means a calf. So this is the second principle or quality that Mother Earth sees in King Prithu. Apanna Vatsala. When one is Dharmakya, one knows religious principles, automatically one will also be Apanna Vatsala. One will automatically protect whoever has come for shelter. And the third thing that she addresses him as is Bhutanam Palana Avasthitaha. You are situated as the king, which means one who is intended to be the protector of all living entities. Bhutanam refers to all the living entities. And Palana refers to protection. So the king is especially meant to protect all the praja, the citizens, the subjects. So she uses 3 terms to address King Prithu. First one is Dharmakya, knower of religious principles. The second one is Apanna Vatsala, one who gives shelter to the surrendered souls. And third is that he is offering protection to all living entities, Bhutanam Palana. So one who knows religious principles will give shelter to the surrendered souls and will also try to give protection to everyone else. However, it is the king who is particularly tasked with this responsibility on behalf of Krishna. Actually, these 3 qualities, like indeed all good qualities, are originally qualities of Krishna. Krishna is the original reservoir of all transcendental qualities. And he empowers different entities with portions, very fragmental portions of these opulences according to their karma. So therefore, even amongst ordinary human beings, we may see someone is very beautiful, someone is very intelligent, someone has some other kind of ability or opulence. So these are things that are granted by Krishna very mercifully to that particular entity because he or she deserves it by karma. The person has performed some sort of karma in the previous life to deserve this opulence in this life. And sometimes these opulences may be seen in a greater degree. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna refers to this as Vibhuti. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when speaking about Shaktyavesh avatars, and Prithu Maharaj is a Shaktyavesh avatar as we were discussing yesterday, he also mentions that there is a lower grade of empowered entities. They are called Vibhutis. So Shaktyavesh avatars are those living entities who are very significantly empowered with certain opulences to fulfill a certain purpose or a task. However, there are other entities who may not be empowered to that degree, but still they are empowered more than ordinary human beings. They are called vibhutis. And Srila Prabhupada makes reference to the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, wherein we see Arjuna asking Krishna to show or exhibit his opulences. Arjuna wants to see or understand what Krishna's opulences are. Krishna smiles, of course, because he knows that his opulences are unlimited. Nevertheless, he mentions just some of the chief opulences. And for each opulence, there is some entity that exemplifies it. In the 10th chapter, for example, of all immovable living entities, I am the Himalayas. See, of all the living entities in the water, I am the shark, Makara. So there are certain, every category in this universe has someone or something that is extraordinary. So when we see that extraordinary personality or wielders of the bow and rams, he has to think of the Supreme Lord. Of all the flowing rivers, I'm Ganga. So amongst all the majestic rivers, there is no river like Ganga. So whatever or whoever is extraordinarily opulent or significant in any particular category is a representation of Krishna's opulence. So that is a vibhuti. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam shrimat urjitam evava tat tat evava gachattvam mama tejonsha sambhavam. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam. Sattvam in existence, whatever you see in existence that is opulent, vibhuti mat sattvam. Yat yat vibhuti mat sattvam, shrimat, whatever is beautiful, urjitam, whatever has prowess, is powerful, is grand. So anything you see in this world that is beautiful, opulent, is grand, you understand that to be just a spark of my splendor. Mama teja anshara. Teja means splendor. So ultimately everything wonderful, beautiful, opulent, powerful is coming from Krishna. So these are qualities of Krishna, and he is the original dharmagya. He is the original apanna vatsala. He is the original Bhutanam Palan. But he, by power of attorney, to use Srila Prabhupada's language, he gives the power of attorney to the king to do that. So the king is a representative of Krishna in fulfilling Krishna's responsibility of giving protection to the living entities and to those who are surrendered. So the king specifically has a very major responsibility. The king or the ruler or head of state, whatever. So this is how Mother Earth is looking at King Prithu, because he is the king. You are situated, avasthitaha bhavan, you are situated as what? Bhutanam palane. You are meant to protect all living entities. The implication being that therefore you must protect me. You must not cause harm to me. You must not kill me. So this is the plea that Mother Earth places before King Prithu when she realizes there is no escape. And helplessly she surrenders to Krishna, to King Prithu. Now it's interesting that even after all this, Maharaj Prithu is not in a mood to give up. He understands all these things. He understands all the things that Mother Earth is saying. Mother Earth wanted to take, he took the form of a cow so that she would get immunity from punishment from the king, because one is not supposed to punish or harm a cow. But still Maharaj Prithu seemed to be bent on punishing her. So does it mean that he was not a dharmajna, not a knower of religious principles. Let's take two examples from Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Can you mention any demons who took the form of a cow or a bull or a calf? No, Dhenukasura was a donkey. Who else? Arishtasura, a bull. And there was Vatsasura, who was a calf. Soon after, Nanda Maharaj and the other residents of Vrindavan shifted from Gokul. They went across the Yamuna River and came to Vrindavan, the place that is today called Vrindavan. Krishna killed the demon Vatsasura. Vatsa means calf. So this demon had taken the form of a calf and mingled with the other calves who were around Krishna. Because Krishna was very small at that time. He hadn't started taking care of the cows. And he was taking care only of the small calves. So when Krishna understood that the demon has taken the form of a calf, he informed Balaram of the same. And he went up behind Vatsasura, caught him by the hind legs, and whirled him round and round and round very rapidly, and then threw him up into the sky. And he fell on top of some trees. And in the process of being whirled around so rapidly, his life air left his body, meaning that he died. So he killed a calf. Yes. But Krishna understood that even though he had taken the body of a calf, but he was actually a demon who was in disguise actually. So he killed. Similarly, we see that later on in Krishna's pastimes, there came a fierce demon who took the form of a bull. His name was Arishta. And he came storming into Vrindavan. And there was a great fight between Krishna and Arishtasura. Every time, with heavy breathing and snorting, this bull used to charge at Krishna. Either he evaded Arishtasura, or he just slapped him, or he just took him and whirled him around. Every time the bull demon would get up, rise and again charge. Finally, Krishna just caught him by the horns and the tail, and then he just thrashed him to the ground. And Shukadeva Goswami mentions, just like we would beat wet cloth that is being washed on a stone. You're not familiar with it here in Australia because you use washing machines. So you don't know the fine art of washing clothes. You just put in some washing powder into the machine, press a button and you have your clothes. But washermen in India, they usually go to the bank of a river or some water body and they have a special stone which is flat. And then they have these clothes which they wash and then they apply soap and then they beat them against the stone to take out whatever dirt there may be. So in the same way, Krishna beat the demon on the ground and then the demon died. And of course was delivered. Both Vatsasura and Arishtasura were delivered. They retained salvation because they were killed personally by Krishna. So anyway, Krishna did not consider this to be significant. That this is he is a bull. But he understood this is actually a demon who has come to harass and to give trouble to my dear devotees, the Vrajavasis. Now, as it happened, and this is Krishna's pastime, a very important pastime took place after this. Does anyone know what that pastime was? The formation of Radha Kund and Sham Kund, which are considered the most holy places in the entire creation. Soon after that, when Krishna was having his usual quarrels with the gopis, and they got into these to get into arguments, so the gopis taunted Krishna that don't touch us, don't come near us because you have become polluted. He said, why have I become polluted? I am the source of all purity. He says, nonsense, you are not the source of purity, you killed a bull. You have committed a grievous sin and therefore we can't touch you, we can't be near you. So Krishna lodged a protest. He said, but this bull was a demon. He said, never mind, whatever it may be, but ultimately he was a bull. Bull is like father, cow is like mother. So we have to protect cow and the bull. So you have not followed the principles of dharma. You have committed a grave sin. So till you have atoned from it, we do not consider you pure. So they said, you must go to all the holy places, bathe in all the holy rivers, atone for your great sin of killing the bull. Then we will consider whether we can talk to you or not. We will see at that time. So Krishna became very indignant. And he said, how dare these gopis talk to me like this? They don't know who I am. All right, I will show. So he said, I don't have to go to all the holy places. I will bring all the holy places here. And then I will take bath right here. Then one by one, all the holy places and all the holy rivers started coming. The Ganga came, Yamuna, Narmada, Tapi, Godavari, Kaveri, all the holy rivers, one after the other came. Then all the holy kunds from different parts of the universe, they also came in their personified form. And they offered their waters. And then Krishna bathed. And a wonderful kund was made. And then Krishna said to Radharani and to gopis, because you have falsely accused someone, so therefore you have also committed a sin. So you also have to purify yourself by bathing in a holy place. And then he said, I can give you access to my pond if you want. You can take your bath here. So you don't have to go everywhere to get purified. Just bathe here. So Radharani says, no, I don't need your one. I am capable of making my own arrangements. So she made a big line of gopis all the way to Manasi Ganga. And pots, they shifted the pots from one to the other, one to the other. And eventually then they started filling the ditch that Radharani and gopis had made with their bangles. They broke the bangle and started digging the earth. So they made a ditch and they started filling, but that would have taken a long time. Meanwhile, all those personified rivers and kunds, the demigoddesses appeared before Srimati Radharani with folded hands and begged for some service. So being very compassionate, Srimati Radharani accepted their service and the waters flowed into her kund, which became known as Radha Kund. So the killing of a bull eventually in this case became the reason for the manifestation within this world of two of the holiest places in all of existence, Radha Kund and Shyam Kund. And these two are considered like the eyes of Vrindavan. Of course, that doesn't mean that we can take similar liberties. We have to see that the cow and bull are protected and the calf are protected in all circumstances. This is a very prime duty. Srila Prabhupada spoke a great deal about this. And there is more to speak on this subject, but today is already almost 8:30. So we'll pause here for questions. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free. Yes.
Thank you. Here you see the mother earth in the form of cow here, you know, trying to find different way before surrendering. Similarly, you know, trying to, you know, surrendering is like the last option, you know, we like. And yeah. Also, surrendering is not like, you know, once you achieve, you're always there. It's like moment to moment, you know, how do we surrender, you know, fast before trying out all the options. Like, you know, how we can surrender every moment to the Lord.
Yes, that's a good question. Question is, Mother Earth surrendered when she saw there was no option. So similarly, there's a tendency we may have that when we've exhausted all other options, only then we'll surrender. And we wait Until everything is done, we see we have no other way to enjoy this world. We get battered and battered, and then we surrender to Krishna. What will it take for us to surrender to Krishna without waiting to exhaust all possible options? That's the question, right? Of course, the point is that we have exhausted all other options. From time immemorial, we've been here for millions of births in different bodies. As we said, we've been there, done that. We've done everything required. We've tried and tried and tried. Puna punas charvita charvana. We're chewing the chewed again and again and again. We've tried it again and again, but we failed every time. So actually we have exhausted all of the options. The only thing is, we don't think we have. Some famous poet has said, hope lies eternal in the human breast. So there's always hope. Some more option, another option. Even though we have exhausted all options, but we think, no, there is hope. This is called Maya.
False ego.
False Maya, basically Maya. It's just Maya, the influence of Maya that makes us think that there is still hope. I may still, you know, be... there is some hope for enjoyment and for happiness in this world. Despite seeing that there is no hope, hoping against hope, that is the situation. So it needs spiritual knowledge, it needs our spiritual practices, then the spiritual intelligence dawns and we understand that actually there is no hope. So it is in the best interest to surrender to Krishna. As is, where is, whatever condition we are in now, we should surrender to Krishna. Yes, Mahatma.
Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you mentioned in your lecture, grant surrender in this verse. So what are the items for surrender?
What are the items of surrender?
Yes,
it's a big topic. In the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Srila Sanatana Goswami has cited from the scriptures to explain that there are six limbs of surrender. Anukulyasya sankalpaha, pratikulyasya vajana, rakshishyati iti vishvaso, gopritve varanam tatha, atmanikshepa karpanyam, shadvidham sharanagatihi. Sharanagatihi means surrender. Sharan means surrender, gati means the destination. Shadvidha indicates six ways or six limbs. Shad indicates six, vidha indicates types or limbs. So there are six aspects or limbs of surrender to the Supreme Lord. The first is anukulyasya sankalpaha. Sankalpaha means to resolve something very firmly within our heart. Anukulyasya means favorable. So with determination to accept in our life all things that are favorable for our Krishna consciousness. That's the first symptom of surrender. Second, pratikulyasya varjanam. With the same firm resolve with which we accept everything favorable in our life, we should also reject all that is unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. So that's the second symptom of surrender. The third symptom is rakshishyati iti vishvaso. Vishvas means faith. To have strong faith, complete faith, that rakshishyati, that the Supreme Lord will protect me. To have complete faith in the protection of the Lord. That's the third symptom of surrender. Gotritve varanam. To understand that it is actually Krishna who is maintaining me. It's not me. It's not because I go out to work in the morning, come back in the evening, and I get a salary or a profit at the end of the month that I am maintaining myself. The maintenance is coming by Krishna's mercy. Ultimately, Krishna is the maintainer. It's not me. Even though I have to do my duties, etc., I have to put in my efforts, but it is Krishna. So that's the fourth symptom. The fifth is Atmanikshepa, which means to understand that I am completely dependent on Krishna. I am not independent. I have the independence to desire, but I am completely dependent on Krishna for the fulfillment of those desires. And lastly, Karpanyam, being humble, considering oneself as a servant of all living entities and of course of Krishna and the devotees. So these six are the symptoms or the limbs of surrender. Okay, any other questions? Yes.
Is Mother Earth in designation bigger than Maharaj Prithu or smaller position?
Is Mother Earth in a higher position than Maharaj Prithu or in a lower position? Well, in one sense, she is higher because Mother Earth is a demigoddess and a normal king on the earth is just a human being. But in this case, it's different because the king is no ordinary king. He is a pure devotee of the Lord. He is a very exalted personality and he is a Shaktyavesh avatar who has been especially empowered with the potency to protect living entities, Praja Palana Shakti, and to rule the earth. So because of his extraordinary qualifications, even though generally Mother Earth would be considered worshipable for ordinary living entities, some of whom may become kings, but in this case, because of Prithu Maharaj's exalted status, we can understand that he was in a position even to reprimand Mother Earth.
And when Mother Earth was, we heard she was running and that means the entity which is presiding as Mother, she was running.
Yes. So as I was mentioning yesterday, that every planet has a presiding deity. Just like every country has a prime minister or a president or something. Someone who is overseeing the affairs of that place. So Mother Earth is the presiding deity. So she took the form of a cow in fear of King Prithu and she ran all over the universe. And Maharaj Prithu was chasing her. Any other questions? Yes. Oh, you're okay. Yes.
Maharaj, you are saying that one should have a devotional piety so that he can surrender like that. So, can we trick people so that we can create devotional piety for them? Is that okay? Well, I'll give you an example. Sometimes people say, you know, they are vegan like that. They cannot have diet, but still we give Mahaprasad saying, you know, it's okay, you can have it's vegan like, you know. So are, you know, book distribution or, you know, prasadam distribution. So we trick in a way that, you know, their devotional piety is increased. Is that all right?
So okay, the question is that it was mentioned in the lecture that it is because of some devotional piety in the past that some fortunate souls are able to surrender to Krishna. And that is a fact because there are many others who are suffering but they don't get that inclination or the intelligence to surrender. So can this devotional piety be induced to other people by some kind of trickery? That is the question. Transcendental trickery. That's what we do. But not in a malicious way. Not in a kind of negative way. In the sense, we just engage people in devotional service, very simply. I mean, not in a cunning sort of way that people associate the word trickery with, but it's in a very beneficial way. So we give them some opportunity for hearing the holy name or taking some prasadam. Like for example, there are some people who may not take prasadam if you tell them it's prasadam.
You tell them it was my birthday yesterday or whatever, I'm giving you this cake. They take that. Because it's your birthday cake. But what you don't tell them is it's prasada. So that kind of thing is fine, but nothing more devious, nothing more than that. That's not recommended then. Especially when it comes to money or something. Because ultimately then it backfires. If it's something simple, innocent, that's fine. Yes, you had a question?
There are great things like Maharaj Parikshit who have performed great deeds, like for example, just as in Kali. So why aren't they classified as, why isn't he or some other things classified as Shatravarti?
The question is, why aren't personalities like King Parikshit, who did extraordinary work in the protection of dharma, etc., classified as Shakya Vaishnavatar? You could call them as vibhutis, but Shakya Vaishnavatar indicates something very, very extraordinary. And they are usually specified in the scriptures. So, because these names are mentioned in the scriptures as Shakya Vaishnavatars, so we consider them as such. But definitely, even kings like Parikshit, or even if they are non-devotees, if somebody is exhibiting some extraordinary opulence or capability, we can understand actually it is Krishna's capability, which is being reflected in that person in a very minute way. Yes?
While you mentioned how Krishna said in the Gita that all the rivers are Ganga, and we see in past times of Krishna which is liberated, but then Yamuna. So, just curious.
If all the rivers are Ganga, but Krishna's pastimes happened in Yamuna, so how does one see this? Well, Krishna is making general statements overall about the Himalayas. He doesn't speak about Govardhan. He speaks about Himalaya. So he's speaking in a general way. But when it comes to his Vrindavan pastimes, yes, then it is Yamuna, then it is Govardhan. Yes? Then it is the cow. Like that. So because he's speaking in general about what people perceive and understand. That's the reason he says that. So okay, it's time now and it's almost time. People must be hungry, and hungry people can be angry people, so we have to be careful. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ratharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande.